are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hump Day edition of On the Line. Lance, how you doing today, my man?
Doing great, Noah. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. Find us on Twitter at PointGardner, at DawPound. Fun show for everybody planned out today. We've got a pre-recorded interview with Zach Blackerby of the Locked on Auburn podcast coming up at 2:30 p.m., as well as we have our weekly edition of Talking Ball with Buster Daniel coming up in hour number two as he previews Lee Scott football's week two, I guess. Yes, this would be week two because there's week zero in high school football as well. So week two matchup for the Lee Scott Warriors as they take on the Glenwood Gators. It's 1-1 Glenwood Gators against an 0-1 Lee Scott football team, but it's Beat Glenwood week, and we have Buster Daniel on the show with us later on coming up in hour number two. We'll start off the show with giving a scouting report on the Akron Zips. We'll also give a scouting report on Miami today. We'll just call it Report Wednesday or Scouting Report Wednesday. A lot of times, Wednesdays, Tuesdays, they end up being walkthrough days for high school teams, for college teams, as they get ready for upcoming matchups. It'll be the same for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of what Auburn will be looking at against Akron, I mean, we've talked about it before on the show. We've broken down Akron in terms of grading their position groups and things like that. But it seems like Auburn's going to be able to implement their game plan. At least it feels like pretty easily. Now there are a couple of players on Akron's roster that may be intriguing to watch. May lead to a couple of scoring drives. Potentially could lead
a
Akron,
couple.
A couple, maybe. Tops.
If Auburn has multiple scoring drives given up, I'm going to be disappointed.
So you're expecting 10 points or less?
Yes.
I'm down with that.
I will be disappointed if 10 points occurs. I don't want to see two digits underneath Akron's name.
And I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but if it would happen, there are a couple of players that I think could make it happen. But outside of those two players, man, this Akron team was not very good last season. Bowling Green and Akron were probably two of the worst teams in all of college football last season, and Auburn's got an easy one to open up the 2021 season.
Well, let's start breaking down Akron schematically. What can people expect from Akron on this Saturday?
Yeah, well, in terms of their offense, they bring back 8 starters. And last season, Cato Nelson was out for the entire season with an injury. Their quarterback, he's been there for 4 years. Veteran guy, a little bit of a dual threat, has thrown for over 5,000 yards during his Akron career. Zach Gibson, the freshman last season, was able to step into his place. And in terms of what they like to do schematically, I mean, they had a really tough time on offense last season. 17.2 points per game, 141 rushing yards per game, 139 passing yards per game. They really struggled to throw the ball. But whenever they did throw the ball, based on film that I've watched and broken down, they really like to throw the ball outside the hashes. Noah, you may have some PFF numbers that may reflect that, whether that's true or not. But based on what I saw, they like to throw it outside and get receivers open on some nice timing routes.
A large portion, I'll say this, the most attempts, the sector of the field that Zach Gibson had the most attempts at was within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and in between the numbers. But they do like to get the ball out on the edge. And you're right, quick routes, timing routes, as opposed to downfield passing. You look at the numbers for them in terms of depth of target, 66.1% of the time the ball was thrown within 10 yards or behind the line of scrimmage. These guys are not stretching the field vertically. Only 8.3% of their balls thrown were past 20 yards, so downfield, deep downfield. They're not really stretching the field that much. Not a lot of diversity here, which is probably due to personnel issues. This offensive line is downright horrible. Gave up over 4 sacks a game last year, 4.3 to be exact, had 26 total allowed in 6 games last season. It's a big reason why they went 1-5 last year. Of course, Zach Gibson is not the quarterback that Cato Nelson is. A little bit more turnover prone, not as accurate, not as dual threat as Cato Nelson. Cato Nelson, prior to him going out due to an injury, was helping this Akron team stretch the field vertically. He actually, believe it or not, had, according to Pro Football Focus, an 83.6 Pro Football Focus passer grade on deep throws back in 2019, the last time that we saw him healthy. So Cato Nelson has the ability to stretch the ball a little bit better than Zach Gibson vertically, and we will be seeing Cato Nelson on Saturday. But this offense, from a passing standpoint, personnel issues are a concern. Pass protection is a concern. They're not going to be able to stretch the field vertically.
Right, but they're going to have Cato Nelson, who I believe, like you just said, is a better decision maker than Zach Gibson. 34 touchdowns to 16 interceptions over the course of his time at Akron. He's never finished a season higher or with a completion percentage that was higher than 53.8%, but he's not a terrible quarterback. I mean, he's a veteran guy in this offense. I know it's not very good.
It's just kind of average in the MAC, yeah, but that's saying that's something positive to say about this unfortunate Akron team.
And then I'll also say, you know, we're talking about the passing game, but I don't think we're talking about what should be the strength for this team in the 2021 season is that running game with Teon Dollard. They love this guy, and I think they're going to try and pound the rock with him. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it against Auburn's defense, but they're going to be able to, or going to at least try to do it throughout the season. I've got an interesting statistic here for you. Akron averaged 17.2 points per game, right? During the games that Dollard had more than 20 touches, Akron averaged 25.3 points per game, 8.1 points above their average on the season. When he had less than 20 touches, Akron averaged 9 points per game, which was 8.2 points below their average on the season. Whenever they get this guy the ball consistently, he is going to be able to wear down defenses. I watched some film from last year. Once they got the ball, this kid the ball, even in games that they lost, eventually the defense would start to wear down. And he's kind of looks like a Kerryon Johnson type of guy, except he's got a little bit more of a build to him. I like this kid. I think he's talented. He's probably their best player on roster. I think they're going to try and get him a few touches. He's not known as a receiver, but they're going to try and pound him inside.
Quick question to you. How much time have you spent watching Akron football this week?
I would say about an hour and a half.
How's your headspace?
Pretty,
okay.
Pretty good. It was not the prettiest offense I've ever seen, I'll say that. It was very sluggish. It was the definition of sluggish.
Offensive line play, a major concern, I'm sure. Looking at Akron schematically, still here, pass, run, breakdown. They run the ball 59% of the time. At least that's what they did last year. Threw the ball 41% of the time in 2020. Once again, I go back to, and this is what you just said about them being sluggish. I think maybe a reason why you had that type of perception about them was not a lot of diversity here. That's probably due to some personnel issues. Once again, up front, terrible offensive line, but offensive strength, and you just hit on it. Teon Dollard is the offensive strength here. The running game is the strength. If you had to point to something, I don't think you could really say anything is a strength on this team, but if you were going to point to something that they do semi-well, it is Teon Dollard carrying the football. He was a first-team All-MAC selection last year. Akron averaged more than 4 yards per carry in 4 of their 6 games last season. I actually believe in 3 of their 6 games they averaged more than 5 yards per carry. They were able to get on the ground, but once again, you have to consider this was against MAC competition, and there was a MAC game last year where poor old Akron averaged 0.1 yards per carry against Miami, Ohio, the mighty Red Hawks.
Man, oh man, and a 7-38 loss. I will say this, though. You talk about personnel issues and having issues up the front. They bring back all 5 of their starting offensive linemen, but everyone but the center was a freshman last season. Like, they are incredibly young.
And they're still really young up front, though. I mean, they're all redshirt freshmen now, right? With the exception of, once again, you said Bryce Peterson, the center, who is a senior now. Looking at an offensive weakness, you and I have touched on this. Name something, anything. It's a weakness probably, but I'll go specifically with the passing game. I go back to the offensive line allowing 4.3 sacks per game without the protection. Akron really can't diversify their passing game. forces them out onto the edge, forces them a couple of yards in front of the line of scrimmage, really, or behind the line of scrimmage. I go back to the statistic that I just pointed out on depth of target for them last year. This is a team that threw the ball 66% of the time within 10 yards or behind the line of scrimmage. Auburn's going to be able to cover this team really well. They're going to be able to, if they can make tackles out in space, which they're going to have to, but if they can make tackles out in space, I have a hard time believing that Akron's going to move the football. And a question that I want to ask people out there, just like we asked yesterday about receptions, who was going to lead Auburn in receptions, I'm curious. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. How many yards will Akron finish with at the end of the ballgame?
Yeah, and I think definitely the if we were going to set an over-under on this number...
200.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was going to say.
That's harsh, but 200.
Was what I was going to say. I want to say over.
I'm going to go over. That still seems like a really easy bar to clear right in today's day and age of college football.
They averaged 281 total yards per game last season, but against
only 243 back in 2019 when they were still playing a good non-conference schedule. So maybe it's not that high of a bar to clear.
Maybe it's not. Yeah. Again, you said in terms of weaknesses, you could really point at anything. I agree with you. I think the passing game is going to be an issue for Akron. I think the secondary is going to feast against Akron on Saturday.
There were two games last year where they almost did it or did not clear the 200-yard threshold that you and I just said. Against Miami, Ohio, once again, a 7-38 loss, only had 145 yards of total offense. And then against Buffalo at the end of the year, a 56-7 loss, only had 204. So maybe it isn't that bad of a number to set. Over under 200 yards for Akron against Auburn on Saturday.
I'm going to say they barely get over because I feel like that's a little harsh to say. It's like, no, Auburn's going to go out there and just destroy them, especially considering Auburn breaking in new schemes. And on the defense, they're going to be in a 3-4, all those new faces knocking the rust off. There may be a play here or there that gets Akron just over 200.
Let's move to the defensive side of the football where there are some pretty fun names to talk about here, especially in the linebacker group. Defensive strength for me for this Akron football team. And Phil Steele's got him as the sixth best linebacker group in the MAC. And I think this is dead on. There's some talent there in that linebacker room, but they are severely handicapped by defensive line play. Bubba Arslanian, an inside linebacker, ranked first in the country in solo tackles per game last year. Once again, you talk about Zacoby McClain. He was second in the country behind Troy's. There was a linebacker named Marshall for them. He was second in the country behind Troy's linebacker for total tackles last season. But if you're going to solo tackles per game, Bubba Arslanian of Akron was number one in the country. They also add Michigan State transfer Jeslord Boateng.
Wow.
Talk about the best inside linebacker names in the country. These guys, like, think about this. Auburn's inside linebackers, Zacoby McClain and Owen Papo against Akron linebackers Bubba Arslanian and Michigan State transfer Jeslord Boateng. Get on this game's level when you're talking about names.
Wow. Forget the Brandon Council Bowl. This is just the linebacker bowl. This is just the linebacker name bowl. That's fantastic. Like you mentioned,
I can't wait to hear Auburn's PA announcer Rick Smith say Jeslord Boateng on the tackle.
Jeslord Boateng on the tackle. Yeah, like you mentioned, the defensive line is a severe handicap for this team. They gave up 6.3 yards per carry last season. That's just flat out bad. That's just not good. They bring back three starters on that defense. I believe they're going to run a 3-4. Bubba Arslanian, like you mentioned, really talented, 74 tackles last season, second team all MAC honors. Up until they got that transfer and a couple other guys, in the spring I had this note. The projected starting linebackers for the Zips had a combined 26 tackles last season outside of Arslanian. So if the Michigan State transfer does not perform, I'm concerned about their depth at the position, but I do agree. I think it's the most talented part of this entire defense.
Weakness on this defense, you could point towards the defensive backfield. You could point towards the defensive line. I'm going to narrow in here on the defensive line. This group isn't good enough to be lining up in a three-man alignment. You need more. You really do. You need more if you're going to stop the run better than what they did last year, which was allowing 248 rush yards allowed per game in the MAC. If you're doing that in the MAC, that is atrocious. All they do up there is throw the football. There's a ton of air raid in the MAC. There's not a ton of primary rushing teams in the Mid-American Conference. And for them to be giving up 248 rush yards allowed per game, this may be the worst rush defense in all of college football, aside from maybe Bowling Green, who was just awful as well. Let's see what Bowling Green gave up last year.
Bowling Green gave up...
Oh, they only gave up 184 rush yards allowed per game. Yeah, this is the worst.
Bowling Green, you said, gave up 184 rushing yards last season?
Yes, per game.
Per game. I just flipped over. I'm looking at Athlon Sports. It says 310 rushing yards per game. But who knows? I don't know.
Let's go and fact check that. I got mine out of Phil Still, so we'll go and fact check that out there.
Okay, Athlon, if you're
Sting, get on it.
If you are telling me that Bowling Green had the fourth best passing defense in the entire country, allowing 165 passing yards per game, you are smoking crack. I don't believe that. Not for a second.
Something else about this defensive line, none of the projected starters are older than a sophomore. Two of them are freshmen or redshirt freshmen. Excuse me, one of them is a redshirt freshman, the other two are sophomore. They ain't ready to play an SEC defensive line.
No, sir.
Sting, you've got an update with us. Who's worse, Akron or Bowling Green in defending the run?
Bowling Green, they do allow 310 yards.
Last season they did?
That was 127.
According to NCAA.com.
How did Phil still get that wrong? Yes, I was looking at the wrong category. Excuse me. I got it wrong. Forgive me.
The point being, these two teams are awful. It's just bad. I would agree with you as far as like pointing out a weakness. This defensive line is just not good. Like you just mentioned, they're incredibly young. This team seems to have a lot of inexperience at a lot of key positions. I just don't see them doing a whole lot of anything against Auburn on Saturday.
100%. Last little bit here on our scouting report on the Akron Zips. Offense, defense, who are the names to watch? Give me one player on both sides of the ball.
I'm going
to
say Cato Nelson instead of Teon Dollard. I'm going to say that he's probably going to be the key for this game. And then as far as defense, I mean, how could you not look at Bubba Arslanian? How could you not?
Jess Lord Boateng.
Okay, I'll go with Bubba, you go with Jess Lord, and then we'll
Bubba Arslanian as well. Yeah.
Cover our bases in the linebacker.
They also have another linebacker, fans of The Office out there. They have an outside linebacker by the name of Michael Scott.
I actually put, believe it or not, in my notes whenever we graded this team months ago, I said something to the effect of like the reason that this defensive line or the linebacker group isn't like graded lower is because they have a backup linebacker named Michael Scott.
That's good. I mean, the name value of this Akron linebacking core is top notch. Of course, you've got the phenomenal names of Arslanian and then Jess Lord Boateng, but then you add the pop culture icon that is Michael Scott. I mean, that is a top-notch linebacking core in terms of name. And then you go onto the offensive side of the ball. I think there are some good names over here, too. You look at their tight end, Nicholas Ogninovich. He was a transfer from Kentucky.
Interesting.
So, huh. Yeah. Offensive side of the ball, though, I'm with you. I go with Cato Nelson as the name to watch there. Interesting statistic here, factoid about Cato Nelson. Just breaking down some of his statistics across his first three seasons with the Akron Zips. He threw for 5,138 yards, 34 touchdowns and 16 picks. So obviously not a high volume of yardage there, not a high volume of touchdowns. But what that should tell you is across three seasons, he only threw 16 picks. He's going to protect the football. It's just kind of a middle-of-the-pack quarterback in the MAC. He's got dual threat capabilities, could put up, you know, anywhere between 200 and 300 rushing yards in a season. But the Pro Football Focus grade about his downfield passing with 83.6 PFF passer grade on deep throws, that's impressive to me. If Auburn, you know, I don't think Akron is going to be able to stretch the field because, once again, I go back to the offensive line is an issue. I don't think that they can protect long enough for him to get back in his drop and then be able to settle and throw downfield and for his receivers to get downfield. I just don't think they have enough time. But if somehow they are able to generate a little bit of protection there, maybe they go max protect or something like that and they just launch up on with one or two receivers or something like that. This guy is a pretty good downfield passer and the statistics prove it.
So a question to you real quick, kind of an over-under like we were doing earlier. Does Akron complete a pass that goes for longer than 25 yards?
I'm going to say no.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
I think Auburn's DBs are that good. Also, Akron at wide receiver, they're only returning three of their top four, but their leading receiver is gone. And their leading receiver last year had a total of 217 passing yards. Receiving yards, rather. So not very good at catching the football either are the Akron Zips. Last season, you said for more than 25 yards?
Yes.
Of course, these are averages, and these guys, I'm sure, at some point had a catch for more than 25 yards, I would hope. But no player in their receiving corps last year that caught more than two passes had an average yards per reception higher than 13.3. So I go back to not stretching the field, not a strength for the Akron Zips. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we take a look at the UAB-Jacksonville State game tonight. It's the start of week one in the college football season, 6:30 p.m. ESPN. UAB favored over Jacksonville State. We pick that game when we come back. You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. We want to hear your thoughts. Over, under on total yardage for the Akron offense on Saturday, 200 yards. Is Auburn's defense going to be that suffocating on Saturday? We want to hear from you. What are your predictions on that? Saturday selections time, UAB 16.5-point favorites over the Jacksonville State Gamecocks. It's an edition of Saturday selections that we're doing here on a Wednesday. Maybe I should change these names. Maybe I should have multiple re-recordings of this, but let's get into Saturday selections.
Saturday selections.
All right, guys, Saturday selections on a Wednesday. UAB Jacksonville State, I just broke this down, 16.5-point favorites are the Blazers. According to Phil Still, 0-2 against the spread against FCS opponents all time.
And boys, I'm going to take UAB and the points. I'm going to say that they cover this 17.5-point spread. You guys know how much I love Bill Clark, and you know how much I love this UAB team and their ability to kind of punch above their weight class this year. They're going to be bringing back Tyler Johnston III, a senior quarterback. Last season, he was injured. Bryson Lucero stepped in. And look, Johnston is not the most efficient quarterback, and he's also a little injury-prone, as seen last season, but he's the best that UAB has. 35 touchdowns to 25 interceptions over the course of his UAB career. Again, pretty turnover-prone, but he's also a dual-threat guy. In his freshman season, I'll pull it up right here, he had at least, I believe it was 359 rushing yards, four touchdowns. I mean, they like to get this kid on the ground if they can, and you talk about their rushing attack. I mean, this running back room is stacked. Dwayne McBride, the sophomore, has already set the UAB record for the longest run in school history with a 75-yarder. He also had a 71-yarder, averaged 9.3 yards per carry last season. Then you look behind him, Lee Witherspoon, Mississippi State transfer. They're going to try and get it done on the ground game because they don't bring back a lot of receiver production. I believe it's Hayden Pittman, their tight end. He's been there for what feels like 6 or 7 years now, was their leading returning receiver. And then that defense gave up 21.4 points per game. They were 7th nationally in passing yards allowed per game, 35th in rushing yards allowed per game. This is a complete team. By the way, they bring back 9 starters on that defense. This is a complete team compared to Jacksonville State, who still has Zarek Cooper, the former Clemson backup, by the way. I'm still going to take UAB to cover with the points. I just think this team is too talented to not get it done tonight.
Yeah, Lance took all of the words out of my mouth. I was going to say all of that, but he beat me to the punch. I'm with him, though. I really like what Bill Clark has done with UAB. I think they win. I think they cover. I don't think it's close.
You don't think it's close?
No.
So we got two covers in the room. Man, I don't know.
Run all over them.
I don't know. Jacksonville State's so talented for an FCS team.
They really are.
And they recruit the same players.
And you look at what they did last season against Florida State. I mean, we've talked about it. They were up at like 21-7 at some point against Florida State. They were up in the fourth quarter or third quarter in that game, late in that game. And Florida State managed to pull away in the waning minutes of that matchup. Jacksonville State's a really talented team. But, again, you guys know how much I love Bill Clark.
Could have been Auburn's coach.
Would have been Auburn's coach. Now, looking back at it now, I'm really happy that we got Harson.
100%. I agree with that. UAB, you already touched on this, one of the better defenses in Group of 5 football, allowing just 21.4 points allowed per game in 2020. It's rather established. Like, last year was not an anomaly. They've been doing this for some time now. The past three seasons, the Blazers have only allowed 20 points per game in the last three seasons. Last year was actually their worst points allowed per game mark since 2017, when they gave up 25.6. which was their return year to football since 2014 when the program was shut down. So defense is good. It's been established there by Bill Clark. Jacksonville State runs the ball 64% of the time, which I don't think bodes well for them running at the UAB defensive line led by nose tackle Tyree Turner, who is a returning starter. Him and Tony Fair played a significant portion of the time there. Tyree Turner, I don't think this is a major step back for them there. Of course, I think Tony Fair is emerging as a major player for Auburn this year, but I think Tyree Turner in Conference USA can still be just as stifling in the interior. And then also defensive tackle Antonio Moultrie, another one of those leading forces on that 3-4 defensive line for UAB. Also, I go back to this. You were talking about Tyler Johnston III. PFF labels him as, quote, college Jameis, as in yes. High risk, high reward.
Love that.
First couple of seasons at UAB, I think it was 3 years for him, he had 24 interceptions to just 28 touchdowns. So high risk, high reward. Can make big plays with his arm. On the flip side, though, turnover machine. Last year, cut his interceptions to 1, had 7 touchdowns after he took the job from Bryson Lucero. He's back in his starting spot after he shared action with Lucero. Let's see if he can hold it down and have another successful season, because UAB's run to a back-to-back Conference USA championship, that runs through the arm of Tyler Johnston III, so pay attention to him tonight in the win. Look, Jacksonville State, team of quality. These guys recruit the same players in Alabama, but I think UAB will win. If they cover by a significant margin, I will be impressed, though. I'll be very impressed about the UAB football team.
Yeah, and again, like, there's obviously opportunity for Jacksonville State to cover. I mean, they're still talented. They've still got Zarek Cooper, and then they have another quarterback on roster as well. Zion Webb completed 58% of his passes last season, over 1,700 yards, 13 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Also had almost 400 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. He's back. They've got the quarterback position figured out at Jacksonville State, but I think this UAB defense is going to be able to shut down what they want to do. Like you mentioned, Jack State likes to run the ball. They've got a couple of dual threat quarterbacks. I think UAB just matches up well with this team, and I know Jack State is talented, and I think they're going to do good things this season, as they normally do, but I just think UAB takes the cake here.
All three going with the Blazers. The line is set at a really good number, though. It's 16.5.
Yeah, it really is.
You guys are confident to cover. I'm not. The history speaking to 0-2 against the spread. I'll say they cover. Not by much. I'll say they cover. This is going to be that's a tough bet. That really is. When we come back, we've got Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast joining us. Remember, UAB Jacksonville State tonight, 6:30 p.m. ESPN. Week 1 of college football is here tonight.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast joining us for the Wednesday edition of the show, as he does most Wednesdays. Zach, how you doing today, my man?
Always good when I'm on the line with you guys. Man, it's finally game week.
That's right, and bit of an extended fall camp when you're talking about Auburn's opponents, but still, you get to be in Jordan-Hare Stadium, and my question to you is, what's that feeling like when we step out on Saturday? What are you anticipating? I don't know if there's a way for us to predict how we're going to feel when we see things truly almost back at normal, maybe a little bit of an abbreviated Tiger walk, but you still get all those festivities that you missed last year. You're going to get to see the Eagle flight. What are you anticipating on Saturday at Jordan-Hare Stadium?
I think you're going to see a crowd that's very eager to get back. I think you're going to see the folks that are in attendance for Saturday night's contest. They're going to be dedicated fans. It's going to be a little bit later, so you kind of think the students will be a little bit more vocal and into it. You get to turn the lights on. A lot of cool things are going to happen to it. Is it going to be a sellout? I don't know. Probably about 85 to 90%. I think you'll probably see some blotches of empty seats, maybe in the upper deck kind of thing.
I'm going to be disappointed if people don't take advantage of this opportunity to get into the stadiums. Tickets can't be that expensive. It's Akron, right? Like, you should be able to find a way to the game.
I think so. It's just, you know, are there going to be 80,000 plus people that want to do that? And, like, I mean, if you got kids, this is a tough one to go to, because, you know, the game starts so late, you're not going to get out till about 10 o'clock if you stay the whole time. And maybe the first half is that way, and then second half some people leave just because it's going to be later. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to that as far as what all people are going to feel and expect. I think that first cheer is always awesome, right? Whether it's a sack on third down or maybe, you know, Bo Nix hands the ball off to Tank Bigsby and he runs for a 40-yard score, you know, something like that. That first eruption from the fan base inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, that, you know, whatever it's going to be, that's going to be a special moment.
I'm expecting an extremely loud War Eagle on the kickoff. I'm expecting a lot of just amplified moments early on. Like when the Eagle flight happens, I'm expecting that to be much higher than what we have seen maybe for a season opener against Akron. It's not about who they're playing. It's about the fact that it's been over a year since you've truly been able to be at a normal college football game, and it finally feels like it's normal again.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting back to football. It's always a hashtag I use every year, hashtag back to football, whether it's NFL or college. You know, you get back into it, and it takes a minute, but not for the football teams, not for the coaching staff. It's instant. There's no gradual process here. Well, maybe there is this year because it's Akron, and you know, you got a few weeks so you get ready for Penn State, but still, it's a football game that matters. There's stakes on the line. You know, how you perform impacts your stat sheet. And, you know, when you got a guy like Tank Bigsby, obviously, you know, I think he's got a chance for a potential Heisman run. So I think that stuff is going to be important. You know, what does that look like in the first half? How often are they going to give him the ball? And then, you know, in the second half, you got to think about load management for some of these guys. I mean, it's reps and snaps that actually matter. So there's a lot to be excited about.
Before we get to X's and O's of the actual football game on Saturday against Akron, the depth chart was released back on Monday with the game notes, of course, and there were some surprises on the depth chart. Really only a two deep, so you know that these players still exist, like Elijah Kanyon and Treshawn right. Miller. They're on the roster, of course, just at third string. I'm curious, any surprises for you? Because I think there was a couple for folks out there.
Well, a lot of the folks talking about Shedrick Jackson being the surprise, we learned that on Saturday. I mean, it was pretty clear that Shedrick Jackson and Demetrius Robertson were the two main receivers, and then Javarius Johnson was your slot guy. So that was a shock when I saw it on Saturday at the open practice, and then reports coming out because so many people were asking the question. But, you know, a lot of reporters in kind of saying, like, hey, talking to folks, Shedrick Jackson's the guy. Shedrick Jackson is a starter. So when we learned that officially on Monday, that was an interesting thing.
He just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Folks really didn't talk about him in fall camp.
No, but I'll tell you what, Noah. I mean, watching him on Saturday, I think we kind of have, or at least I did, I'm guilty of this. We had this image of Shedrick Jackson because he's been kind of viewed as this physical receiver that the Malzahn staff asked him to block all the time. He was on the field a ton.
Great blocker.
But yeah, that was all he was asked to do. But watching him run through a route tree, through drills and all that, where I was sitting, the receivers were right in front of me for a good chunk of it. And he looked way more smooth than I would have expected him to. And so he looked very comfortable getting away from the line of scrimmage, which isn't something that we've seen consistently with Shedrick Jackson. That's not his fault. He was just doing what his coaches asked him to do. But Cornelius Williams, the new wide receiver coach, I think he's done wonders with this group. I think it's been really, really cool to see how much better this group has gotten since spring. One is a unit, and then two, you look at all these individual players that have gotten better. But yeah, Shedrick Jackson looked very lean, very athletic to me on Saturday.
Is Cornelius Williams the MVP of the position coaches? Because currently on 24/7 Sports, and it's not close, he is the lead recruiter for Auburn football right now, according to 24/7 Sports coach rankings there. On top of that, you see the progression, the massive progression and the growth of these receivers. Maybe it's too early to say that, but after week one against Akron, we might be saying, man, Cornelius Williams did a job.
Well, whenever that hire was announced, we all talked about, it's like, okay, the coaching world is talking about Cornelius Williams as an up-and-comer, as a star in the making. And I think between him and Nick Eason, I mean, there are just two absolute studs on this coaching staff. And I think there's other guys, too. I'm really impressed with Zach Gethridge. I think he's going to really help sell Auburn and other guys like that. But, yeah, then obviously Harsin is very high on Jeff Schmetting with, you know, the titles that he's given him and bringing him with him from Boise and all that. But, yeah, I think so. Cornelius Williams is going to be a guy that gets a lot of really talented guys to play for Auburn. But as far as other surprises with the depth chart, you mentioned Drayshawn Miller. I mean, he's a guy that I don't think we expected. I mean, if you've been following along, I don't think you really expected him to be in the two deep just because we haven't heard much about him at all. And you hear about, you know, these corners making really good plays. I mean, guys like Roe Torrence had jumped him on the depth chart. I was told there may have been some injury kind of thing, you know, that limited him early in practice. So maybe he'll take those steps to get back. But as far as my biggest surprise, J.J. Pegues showing up on the 2 deep, only playing defensive line for like 5 minutes. That's a big deal to me. And so Tony Farrah being the starting nose tackle, and right behind him, J.J. Pegues.
All right, looking at the X's and O's for Saturday's football game, I've asked this question to a lot of different folks. What are you expecting to see schematically from them on Saturday?
I don't think you're going to see a whole lot. I think it's going to be very vanilla. Look, I watched a lot of Akron yesterday, and they are a very boring football team. They're not very good. They're not very talented. They have some leaders on the squad, but that doesn't necessarily make them good football players. So I think you're just going to see Auburn line up and beat you on both sides of the football because that's what they can do. You may see some level of sophistication in the passing offense just because you need to put that
on
the field. Exactly. And so what a great opportunity for Bo Nix and Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo and these new receivers that are kind of getting comfortable, because Akron's pass defense stinks. Like, they are really, really bad. They've got a grad transfer from Michigan that plays strong safety. His name is Jalen Kelly Powell. You know, maybe there's some talent there just because Michigan went after him. And, you know, Michigan does recruit well. You can say what they want about the program, but they do recruit good, talented players. So that's a guy to look at, you know, as far as their defensive backs. But, like, they don't have a whole lot on the defensive side of the football.
No, and you can honestly say that their run stopping is possibly even worse than the passing yards that they allowed last season, because they're averaging like 6.1 yards allowed per carry. That is awful. That actually may have been one of the worst marks, if not the worst mark, in all of college football. But another question that I want to ask you that we posed on our show yesterday: who's the leading receiver of this group in terms of catches? That yards, that's hard to gauge. But catches, who do you think is the leading receiver?
I think Johnson. I think Javarius Johnson will lead in just receptions, not yardage, but I think he'll lead in receptions. We saw it in A-Day. We saw it in the open practice in the spring. We saw it in the open practice a few days ago. Bo Nix really feels comfortable throwing to Javarius Johnson. I think some of that's scheme. I think some of that is taught. I think some of that is being told, okay, here's where your outlets are, your safety outlets, your checkdowns. And that's not always a running back or a tight end. Sometimes it's a slot receiver being sent across the middle that's, you know, just a yard or two downfield. So I think, Javarius Johnson leads the team in catches when it's all said and done.
What did you take away from the quarterbacks at the open practice? I know you just mentioned Bo Nix and some of the things that you were taking away from him, but what was kind of your overall impression?
I didn't see too much of a drop-off in the limited drills that we got to see, and especially like with the pace drills and things like that. They both seem to know where to go with the football, which is very nice. You talk about Nix and Finley. Finley's huge. He's ginormous. I was skeptical about the 6'7", but all of a sudden you see him out there, and it's like, maybe so. Compared to other guys, he's just towering over some of these other players. D. Davis was out there. I didn't really see a whole lot of him that really stood out to me, but that doesn't mean that he didn't do anything impressive. I just didn't really notice it because there was a lot going on. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see the snap count for both quarterbacks when it's all said and done. I mean, they announced that Bo Nix was a starter in the depth chart that they rolled out, and then the next day they gave Bo Nix to the media to answer questions. But I do wonder when they pull Bo Nix and how long they leave Finley in. And
if
when
the spring
Finley
game is an indication, I mean, Bo played for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that could just be the way Harsin does things. You know, I mean, we're so used to the way, you know, the previous coaching staff did it. We got used to it over 8 years. And so there's different mentalities and mindsets on how exactly you want to do that. But yeah, like when you take Bo out and put Finley in, who all comes out with him? Or is it like still the starters? Or maybe you pull Tank and Bo together and you put Finley and Shivers in, but you know, your core, your starting offensive line and your, you know, wide receivers, maybe they stay in. That's going to be some of the stuff that's interesting to me, because if Bo just plays 5 or 6 drives and then Finley plays 5 or 6 drives, and then, like, you know, that's kind of, you know, maybe a little bit into the third quarter, and you've got a lot of starters in there with him, that says something to me, and I think that'd be interesting to see.
What does it say to you?
That I still think they're trying to get Finley ready just in case he's needed.
What do you think we can take away from this Akron game? I hate playing games like this. Okay. And as a fan going to it, of course, you expect to blow this team out. But if you end up with a day like Mercer a couple years ago in 2017, you leave disgusted. But even if you do blow them out, you're like, ah, that was expected, right? It's kind of hard to reach satisfaction in games like this. So what would Auburn have to do for you to reach satisfaction after playing Akron?
I think you want to shut out on the defensive side of the ball. I think that's totally reasonable. I think that's something you can ask for. No late field goals or anything like that. I think that's something that the defense is going to strive for. Maybe if you want to have some even more intense goals of don't let them pass your own 40 or something like that, I think that'd be something that this defense is certainly capable of, especially the starting defense. I mean, they're going to light these guys up. But as far as the offense, limit turnovers and look as crisp and as sharp as you possibly can. And if you're going to make mistakes, make sure they're full-out mistakes so you can go to film later and kind of have some teaching tape from this. Because the goal for these games is to get better. And that's going to be what Brian Harsin says, his 1-0 mindset. He wants to get better every day. He wants to get better from week to week. And that's how you get better, is you go all out and you don't play to the level of your competition and you take care of what you can control. And that's Auburn playing this new brand of football. That's them running the football well. And look, Auburn's offensive line, this is an example. Auburn's offensive line is significantly better than Akron's defensive line. There will be no one to argue against that. But something that you've got to look at, and this is something that we heard from the scrimmages that we saw, is a lot of the time Auburn's offensive line wasn't necessarily getting beat on the individual level. They just weren't blocking everyone. It's just miscommunication along the offensive front. And it doesn't matter how bad of a defense you are. If the three technique or your defensive end doesn't get blocked, they're probably going to make the play, or at least, you know, force a guy in the backfield to do something crazy. That's not a missed block. That to me is more fixable than just getting beat one-on-one. And so it's going to be things like that. You know, are they blocking everyone that they're supposed to? Because that's not going to change from Akron to Penn State in a few weeks to LSU to Georgia. You need to know what your assignments are. And that's been something that it looks like and it sounds like the offensive line struggled with against Auburn's defense and practices. Can they fix that on Saturday? That, to me, I think is the biggest thing that you can look at.
Cam Newton cut by your New England Patriots. I'm sure that came as a surprise to you as well. I saw your tweet. You're like, oh, dot, dot, dot. Now my question is to you, what's next for the guy? Because I've been saying for about a year and a half, around the time that he was getting cut by the Panthers, or really even going into that last season that he had with the Panthers, I said, look, the career looks like it's on the precipice. And he could still play in the league, I think. It's just a matter of, is there an opportunity with a week and a half left until the start of the regular season in the NFL?
And this guy is still Cam Newton. I mean, despite, you know, he's taken a step back from where he was, you know, when he was MVP and, you know, almost won the Super Bowl and things like that. He's still Cam Newton. When you sign him, you're still going to, you know, get a guy that's very outspoken, that's very loud in a good way, and that, you know, teammates really, really love. Everybody that plays with Cam absolutely adores what he brings to the locker room and the atmosphere and things like that. He is a leader. You know, you could say whatever you want about him, but the guys that play with him love playing with him. Can you have that as a backup in the NFL? I think that's the question. Would Cam be willing to be a backup? I think he would be because he is a team-first guy. But, you know, I heard a lot of people talking about this yesterday just because I follow a lot of Patriot news because that's my team. But in hindsight, it really seems like the two options were either you start Cam or you cut him because you can't have him backing up a rookie quarterback. I just think with all of the things that come with it, much like signing Tebow, you can't just sign a guy. Like, there's other things that come along with it regardless of what the role is. And so, can he be a backup in Miami? Can he be a backup, you know, to see in Seattle is what I've seen a lot of people throw out.
Could he be a starter in Denver or Washington?
Possibly, you know, and he's got the relationship with Rivera, who's now in Washington back when they were in Charlotte together. Denver seems all in on Teddy, you know, and we've seen a franchise pick Teddy Bridgewater over Cam Newton in the past. So what does that look like? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think he's a starter in this league anymore. And you can say what you want about, you know, vaccinations, and I really don't like talking about this topic just because people get so polarized with it. But based on all the cuts that you saw yesterday in the league, a lot of coaching staffs and front offices, when it was close between two guys, they went with a vaccinated player because the NFL, their contact tracing rules are very, very restrictive. And there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through. And the way Cam Newton handled, you know, the miscommunication with the test and all that, when it was happening, I thought it was interesting because I'm like, okay, he is the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots, one of the biggest brands in sports in the world. And it's like, he's the only person going through that. And when you play for Bill Belichick, who's a guy that's so detail-oriented, you need to know every single process that's in front of you, I'm like, that's not good. Belichick's not going to like that. And then Mac Jones took over the job. It sounds like he was incredible in stepping up, and we saw it in the preseason. And then, you know, reports coming out, scrimmage, this joint scrimmage that they had with the Giants last week, he went 35 of 40 and just like ruined the practice because he just took over and dominated everything. And so, I mean, it sounds like, you know, Cam gave an inch and Mac took advantage of it. And so it stinks. I hate it. I love pulling for Cam as a Patriot, but I think that's done. So, yeah, my question is, like, if you sign Cam, what does that look like? Because also, if you sign him, he has to go through, like, the five-day process before he can join the team. So if somebody even gets hurt in week one or week two or something like that, if you sign him on Monday, he can't show up to the practice until, like, Saturday. And so, like, there's a lot of different things you got to think about when it's all said and done.
Zach, appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody where they can find your content.
Yeah. Locked On Auburn, available wherever you get your podcasts. Also on YouTube, if you are into that. And if you are in the Auburn, Opelika, Lee County area, be sure to tune in to News Talk WANI 98.7 FM. Auburn, Opelika this morning, every morning from 6 to 9. Appreciate it, Noah.
Appreciate it, my man. That was Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast here for the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Back on the line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Just wrapped up a conversation with Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast, breaking down all things Auburn-Akron this weekend for the season opener. Man, what a schedule we've got. I'm kind of a little upset that the game is at 6 p.m. because I would like to watch the Georgia-Clemson game, but we have DVR for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be, I believe that you're going to be at the Akron game as well. I'm going to be there, and it's going to be interesting to see midway through the Akron game, once Auburn's up by 21 or so, for every now and then fans to look over at the Jumbotron and see something happen. I'm going to be interested to see, I was thinking about this earlier, which team is Auburn going to be pulling for? Like the fans, like if something happens, is Auburn going to cheer whenever Georgia does something because we hate Clemson, or are they going to cheer when Clemson does something because we just hate Georgia so much?
Clemson. I think they're going to be cheering for Clemson.
Yeah.
You hear any type of woo for something happening via a score, it might be because Georgia's getting beaten bad.
Yep.
Now, if it's only like 10-7 or something like that, I don't think you're going to get a cheer.
Yeah.
Now, if Miami's got a field goal, well, never mind. That's earlier in the day. Never mind.
Oh, no.
Now, if Miami somehow pulls the upset and that score shows up, well, the place is going to come unglued. Let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight before we get out of here for hour number one. The results of the first semifinals in America's Got Talent is on NBC at 7, Wednesday game show lineup on ABC with Press Your Luck at 7, and the $100,000 Pyramid at 8. A new episode of Guy's Grocery Games is on Food Network at 8 as well. Some movie selections for tonight, Castaway is on AMC at 7, superhero movie with X-Men Dark Phoenix on FX at 6:30. A pair of excellent sports films are on FS1 starting at 6 with The Natural, and then following it at 8:30, The Ultimate Underdog Story, Rudy. In live sports, midweek college football is back. That's right. UAB takes on Jacksonville State at the Crampton Bowl in Montgomery at 6:30 on ESPN. U.S. Open Tennis is on ESPN2 from 6 to 10 with second-round matches in the Grand Slam event, and the Paralympics 2020 in Tokyo is on NBC Sports from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. But honestly, guys, if you're not watching football tonight, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. I was ready for you to ask me, Lance, what are you going to be watching? And I'm like, if it's anything other than UAB Jack State, I'm disappointed. I'm going to be interested to see how Jack State looks offensively. Again, I think that UAB covers in this game, but I'm excited to see former Clemson quarterback Zarek Cooper out there throwing the ball around. It should be an entertaining game. The Crampton Bowl is usually always fun. That week zero-ish type of matchup, it's just always fun to watch, and I'm a big UAB guy, so it's going to be entertaining for sure. And then tomorrow and then Friday, we've got college football. I'm just so glad it's back, man.
Hour number one about to conclude. If you missed any of today's show, go and find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Hit subscribe, hit follow, whatever service you're on, whatever it's called, just follow the show. If you want it on demand, that's how you can get it. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. A fun hour number two coming up. We'll have Making Headlines at 3 p.m. We'll have Talking Ball with Buster Daniel in our second segment. We'll also get into a scouting report on the Miami Hurricanes, which you can expect in that 2:30 clash in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium between Alabama and Miami on Saturday. Also, we play a different edition of Start, Bench, Cut. Win, win, loser. I haven't even got your thoughts on this. Hour number two, coming up.
You are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Daw with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. Whatever's on your mind, we want to hear from you. Thoughts about this upcoming weekend's college football action. It's been a surprisingly quiet week for the phone lines out there. We want to hear from you. Whatever's on your mind, we'll talk it with you as college football gets started again. Saturday selections was a part of hour number one, UAB Jacksonville State. We start off making headlines. There's no other way. We got to talk about college football here.
Absolutely, yeah. UAB Jack State on tonight. We broke it down in the first hour. UAB a 16.5 point favorite, 6:30 tonight, ESPN. Jackson and I picked UAB to cover and to win. Noah, did you say that you were picking UAB to cover as well, but just barely? You think it's close?
Yeah, I'll say like you told me during the break, like 35-17. I was like, yeah, I can vibe with that. Yeah. And that's covering because that's 18 right there.
Right. Yeah, I think, again, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I just think like a score around 35-17 is probably somewhere around accurate, I guess. But what do I know?
I think that's fair. You look at that sounds like a UAB score of the last couple of years, even if they were to play an FCS opponent. But Jacksonville State is a team of quality at the FCS. They're a mainstay in the FCS playoffs. Made it to the quarterfinals this past year before they were eliminated by Delaware, who, if I remember correctly, did make it to the FCS championship game. This is a team of quality. This is a bit I would like to see these teams play often. I think this would be an excellent game to fire up on a regular basis from similar regions inside the state. I know Oxford's a little bit more east of Birmingham, but still Oxford, Anniston area there where Jacksonville State is. I know that is a little bit east of Birmingham, but still they're relatively close to each other, not too far away, and they recruit the same players in this state. Like, if you're being recruited by Jacksonville State, you are probably also being recruited by UAB if you are a state of Alabama high school football recruit.
Yeah, for sure. And, again, when you look at this matchup, like, I feel like UAB should be favored in this game. I feel like they're the better opponent. Not to say that Jacksonville State is bad at all, like we were talking about in the first hour. I mean, they're a pretty solid team. They took Florida State down to the wire last season up until midway through the fourth quarter. I will say it's going to be really disappointing if I can't even get to Saturday without an unblemished record, currently sitting at 4-0 in our picks that we've done. It's going to really stink if the one that I get wrong is Jacksonville State UAB.
You're 4-0. Intern Sting is 4-0. I'm 3-1 because I had the foolish mistake of picking Nebraska to win a football game. At this point, I may never pick Nebraska again. Who are they playing this week?
I think they're playing, it's not Buffalo, is it? It's some, they play two mediocre teams. You and I talked about this earlier in the week, but I will say, like, oh, yes, how foolish of you to pick a Nebraska team that was favored by a touchdown to win against an Illinois squad with
they
a
play
new head
Fordham?
Coach.
Give me the Rams.
Yeah, give me.
Give me the Rams. I don't care if I'm wrong.
Give me Fordham to cover, baby. Yeah, but for real, like, the fact that Nebraska lost is still kind of shocking, even though I know I picked Illinois to win. But, like, Nebraska, as far as, like, their prestige as a program and their talent level, like, you would
think. It's not the fact that they lost that's shocking, because we've seen Nebraska lose a lot of football games recently. What is most shocking is that Nebraska has fallen to a point where they now have lost in two consecutive seasons. In back-to-back seasons, they have lost to the Illinois Fighting Illini.
Let's go. that's the type.
Scott Frost has one of the lowest winning percentages as a Nebraska head coach. That is what's shocking, that the program has regressed from its place amongst the college football dynasty's elite and falling to where they are now. And it was a slow progression. It was a slow decay of the Nebraska football program. It's not like it happened overnight. Like, this happened over the time period of like 20 or 30 years. You forget that just, you know, 7 years ago, Bo Pelini was turning out 9-win seasons like it was nobody's business. Nebraska was still a pretty good football team last decade. But then they move on from him. Doesn't do well with his successor. And then now you're at Scott Frost. And Scott Frost has been abysmal. Once again, one of the lowest winning percentages for a Nebraska football coach with at least 3 seasons under his belt. It's not going well. It's amazing to see how far away it is from what it once was. It's even extremely far away from where it was under Bo Pelini.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I've talked a lot about this coach on this show, about potentially landing at Mississippi State. I'm just intrigued with Jamie Chadwell, man. I'm intrigued to see where he goes after Coastal Carolina, because I don't think he's going to be there forever. Somebody is going to pick him up. Some Power 5 school is going to pick him up and throw a lot of money his way.
You have to ask the question, too, if he puts another 11-1 season together like he did last year. I think there's real potential for him to go undefeated this year. Of course, he lost in his bowl game last year to Liberty, but you have to ask yourself at some point, can this guy's stock get any higher?
Right.
What can he do to improve his stock in the coaching's carousel? I think he's already probably at his peak. But maybe programs are just trying to see, can he do this again? Can he replicate it? If he does replicate it, I don't think that his stock can get any higher on the coaching carousel, and it might be time to jump ship, because things can't get any better than 11-1 or 12-0 at Coastal Carolina.
Does it line up well then with Scott Frost if he has a bad season this year for Nebraska to weigh their options? Would he be a candidate, you think?
Where has Chadwell coached at before? I think he came from Charleston Southern to Coastal Carolina. I know you're going to look that up now. So, yeah, give me this guy's resume, because Nebraska seems a little far away from where we've seen Chadwell coach during his short time at the top.
All right. He was at East Tennessee State, Charleston Southern, North Greenville, Delta State, Charleston Southern again, Coastal Carolina, and then he got the head coaching job in 2019.
He was a head coach, though, in the FCS for a little bit, though, at Charleston Southern, correct?
Yes, he was a head coach at Charleston Southern from 2013 to 2016.
Was he a head coach at East Tennessee State as well?
He was not. He was the quarterbacks, running backs, and tight end coach.
So the only two places that he's been head coach at is Charleston Southern and...
He was head coach at North Greenville and Delta State as well.
Interesting. Well, he built up pretty much every single program that he's been at, so you know he's a program builder, and maybe that's what Nebraska needs at this point, but Chadwell just doesn't seem like... I know what you're getting at. Nebraska needs to get a good head coach. You look at his heat map of where he's coached at before. It's not Nebraska. It's Southeast, right?
Yeah.
So I think Chadwell maybe is a better fit for a Mississippi State, like you pointed out so often.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just intrigued to see what Nebraska does, because I feel like the end of the road is approaching very quickly for Scott Frost, because if he's not been able to get anything done, and whenever I say get anything done, I mean like he's not been able to get them over 6 wins, right? He's not been able to do that, at least I don't believe, with Nebraska.
Closest he was in 2019 when he went 5-7, but losses to Indiana, Purdue, both of those games he was favored in. That sidelined that real quickly.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm saying. Like, as a program, Nebraska is too good of a program to fail like this with a head coach that loves the program. They should be doing better than 5-7, 4-8.
They lost 3 games that year that they were favored in. Lost to Colorado in non-conference play in overtime as well. Granted, that was in Buffalo, but still, I don't remember that as a very good Colorado team back in 2019. So, yeah, you're right. Nebraska's fallen from grace. This took on a mind of its own, this segment did. We're doing making headlines, and our first headline was UAB takes on Jacksonville State in the Crampton Bowl to open week one of the college football season, and we got all the way to Nebraska fallen from grace. How can they recuperate? Let's move on to our second one here. ESPN's Chris Lowe is reporting that Texas A&M is working on a contract extension for Jimbo Fisher. My question is this necessary? Is this the right move? Because he's already, if not the highest paid coach in college football, because I remember when his contract came out, we were all like, our mouths hit the floor. We're like, what? Wow, that's where all the old money went, right? Now they're potentially trying to move him, according to the ESPN article, over $9 million per year.
Yeah, but like what, again, like you just said, why does he need that extra money? And also, where's he going if they're going to extend his contract?
It's not why does he need that much money, because we can ask ourselves about that in anything in the professional football sphere, right? Sure. Like, we could ask ourselves why an NBA player gets paid $35.6 million, right? Like, I don't want to get into the market demand side of things. More of it about this for me is he going to leave? Can someone afford his buyout? Has there actually been any real pressure for Jimbo Fisher to take a job elsewhere?
Where would he go right now, right? That would be better than a program like Texas A&M.
I think there are several locations that would have been better teams maybe that he could have gone to. Maybe not this past coaching carousel, but I think you could see, like, if USC opened up.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's a better job.
But Jimbo Fisher does not resemble anything Los Angeles. Like, not at all. So, like, I don't think that would happen. So my thing is this necessary? Like, do you want to make this mistake? And is it really, like, that bad of a mistake for them extending it? Like, I don't think this is that big of a deal. But the reason why I'm asking this question is, so we went 9-1 last year, big whoop. What happens if he goes 7-5 this year? What happens if he goes 8-4 the next year? What if he resembles the trajectory that he had prior to last season?
Yeah,
he had a 9-1 season last year. It was great. Deserves all the job security in the world, Jimbo Fisher does, because he finally put up last year. But my question is, what happens if A&M goes back to being a four-loss team in the SEC again? Yeah. Is that worth $9 million per year?
I don't think it's an exact comp, but like what Auburn did, throwing all the money at Gus Malzahn and then him just kind of petering out, like I would hate to see A&M do a similar thing and throw a bunch of money at Jimbo Fisher only for him to revert back to 7-5, 8-4, trying to build his quarterback up 4 years from now.
He went 9-4 in his first season, 8-5 in his second season. We were all really wondering about this Jimbo Fisher experience in College Station after 2019. And then he put it together last year and went 9-1. The question is, how does he follow it up this year? You and I not extremely high up on Texas A&M. I think you're looking at a 4 or 5 loss Texas A&M team this upcoming year. It's interesting. It's not moving the needle a dramatic amount on his contract because he's already making all the money in the world, right, when you're talking about coaching contracts. But I do think it's interesting that they're talking about an extension with Jimbo Fisher. Moving on to our third making headlines headline here. ESPN is reporting that Ohio State quarterback Quinn Ewers has signed a name, image, and likeness deal with GT Sports Marketing worth $1.4 million. And a big emphasis on that, I believe, is autographs, according to the article.
Yeah, and this is what we were speculating over just a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, whenever Ewers made the move to Ohio State, just kind of like, well, if he's going to be a backup, like, why is he doing it? Well, one of the things that we said was, like, obviously he's going to be able to get some of this NIL stuff going. Did not expect it to be to the tune of $1.4 million, but obviously that was part of his plan, and it's working out well for him.
Texas is one of the states where high school players cannot benefit from NIL, so that is a big reason why Ewers made that jump to college, I would presume. But I go back to this. I mean, you talked about this already. So he is a freshman now. C.J. Stroud is a redshirt freshman. No game experience for many of these quarterbacks in the Ohio State QB room after Justin Fields last year. Rightfully so, you want Justin Fields on the field at all times when he was in college. But what happens when C.J. Stroud ends up being a beast and you don't play for 2 or 3 years?
It's not good for the trajectory of your career, because if you've got that 1.4 mil in your back pocket, and sure, you'll get other deals. The whole point of the experience is to make it to the NFL, right? Like, you're trying to get in-game experience.
Granted, he would be taking over as a redshirt sophomore at that point, sure, if he weren't to play this season and can collect a redshirt. So it's not like the end of the world, but how often do we see quarterbacks of his caliber okay with waiting for that long to play? Because Justin Fields didn't wait at Georgia. He didn't wait. You think about who was the Miami quarterback. Tate Martell didn't wait. Now he's all the way at UNLV.
Steak.
That's right. But then again, if he's at UNLV at this point, he may have not won either job, right? So maybe he's just trying to find playing time. But still, we've seen time and time again, quarterbacks just aren't okay with waiting. Joey Gatewood wasn't okay with waiting at Auburn. Granted, his trajectory is a little bit different. He got beat out by a quarterback that was the same age as him. Doesn't bode well for you to be able to play at all at that current location, so I understand him moving on. But quarterbacks these days, if they feel they're good enough, they probably don't wait.
Yeah, Yeah, and if he's not going to wait, it's going to be interesting to see where he would end up.
You also get a free transfer now. That's something else you have to take into consideration is this guy now could leave high school, go to Ohio State where he can get the bag, metaphorically speaking here and literally speaking
he's
now.
He's gotten the bag.
Yeah, he's gotten the bag now, $1.4 million, where he can now go and get paid because of the brand name of Ohio State, but he still has the caliber of what he did in high school as that top dog recruit at QB to where if he does say, hey guys, I'm out, I want to leave, I want to go to another school, he could if he wanted to.
He could go to Auburn if he wanted to. That would be wild. You know, come on down. Absolutely. I'd love to see that happen. I'm waiting for Auburn to land a massive recruit, like a five-star, just like a huge name like that. And for this program to just because you see all the hype surrounding
Holden Gurner isn't enough for you.
No, he's a great.
That's my guy.
He's a great recruit. I absolutely love him. I think he's gonna be a fantastic quarterback for Auburn one day. But you see the hype around Suni Lee, right? You see the hype around an Olympic caliber player, an Olympic caliber athlete. I want to see something like that come in for football. It's because obviously it's the focus of this university, right? I want to see that happen, and I want to see fans get really excited about that. So. I'm hoping for the day that we get a guy like Quinn.
Of course, I do want to say this, just playing hypotheticals here, okay? He very well could stay at Ohio State for those 2 years, and C.J. Stroud could be gone for the NFL draft after 2 years. There's no way to predict how things are going to pan out. I'm just throwing things out there and elements at play here and factors at play that we've seen at other quarterback battles across the country. Also, Lance, Auburn has gotten that guy before. His name is Cameron Newton.
Yes.
Auburn has the best version of that.
Yes, but I want to see
it. You want to see it again.
I want to see it again, and I want to see it within this NIL landscape just to
see
what happens.
You
want to see
it in your adult years as well. You want to be able to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Not as a six-year-old or a seven-year-old.
Yeah, I was not aware of just how special that was at the time. So to see it now would be incredible.
Our last headline here in making headlines, the Atlanta Braves blow for the second night in a row a tight game to the Los Angeles Dodgers. With this NL East lead now trimmed to 2.5 games, Ozzie Albies was injured in the game as well, but I think I saw a report late last night or maybe earlier today that the x-rays came back negative, so not bad there for Ozzie Albies, hoping for a quick recovery, I guess, and that they can get him back out there pretty soon. But the Atlanta Braves blowing, for the second night in a row, a tight game to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Me and you said this yesterday, if they were to get swept in the series and the Phillies continue to win, which they did, they're up to 5 wins in a row now, this thing is all of a sudden, you're looking at a 1.5-1 game lead, and you're right back in the thick of it.
And you can't afford to go 2-2 against Colorado, which is a very real possibility. And again, I don't want to sit here and be like, all right, season's over. Everybody pack it up. This is where we lose. This is the turning point. Everybody go home. But like it's coming to a head. If Atlanta can't maintain their lead with a tough schedule coming up to wrap up the season, they're gonna fall behind. That's just the way it is. Because the Phillies, if they start to get hot, it's not good for Atlanta. And as you mentioned, their second to last series is against them. Think about how pivotal that could be if Atlanta goes like 500 up until that point.
And a quick glance at the schedules here, I think is blatantly obvious that the Phillies have an extremely easy month of September. Just walk with me here. Losing records all over the place. The Nationals right now, they're in the midst of that. Three game series with Washington. Today's game postponed to tomorrow, so the Phillies not playing today. But then they get the Marlins in Miami following that with a 3-game series. This is the toughest team they've got left other than the Braves following that series with the Marlins. They play the Brew Crew in Milwaukee, all right? After that, Rockies, Cubs, Mets, Orioles, Pirates, Braves, Marlins.
Man.
A lot of awful teams.
Wow.
Whereas the Braves are playing a lot of teams with a winning record. A lot of teams. Phillies are one of them. Padres are in there. Dodgers right now. Doesn't get easy.
Yeah. Atlanta playing Rockies, Nationals, Marlins, Rockies, Giants, Diamondbacks, Padres, Phillies, Mets. It's only
a slightly tougher schedule, but there are a couple more teams with winning records thrown in there.
Right. It's tough, but...
But that could make all the difference.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the Phillies have been, until this 5-game winning streak that they're on, they have been quite underwhelming. I mean, they did get swept by the Diamondbacks like a week or two ago, but still, not great as far as the schedule lays out in this pennant race and for the Braves to be sliding to where they're at this point.
We got a text here, and it's a comment on the Nebraska situation as well as the Ohio State situation with Quinn Ewers. Nebraska needs to find a culture guy to fix their problems. That's what I'm saying about Mississippi State, man. They need somebody like Jamie Chadwell to come in there and fix that culturally. And then it's $1.4 million over 3 years.
It's still a lot of money.
It's chasing a bag, man. Like, go get it, dude. I'm happy for him.
Who was the text from? Did they say?
They did not.
Well, that's okay. 334-564-1840 if you're on the go and you want to send us a text. Once again, 334-564-1840. Find us on Twitter as well, at Point Gardner, at Doll Pound. That's it for our Making Headlines segment as we bounce around the sports world and take a look at the different headlines happening today and yesterday in sports. When we come back, we've got Talking Ball with Buster Daniel. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. Wednesday edition of On the Line. Going back to our Making Headlines segment a segment ago now. Going to intern Belichick. You've got information on Jimbo Fisher's contract extension.
Yeah, so Brett McMurphy just tweeted out and said that Texas A&M coach Jimbo Fisher's new contract is worth 10 years, $94.95 million, and it goes through 2031.
Yeah, so at this point, they're just banking on Saban retiring and A&M taking over in the West Division.
I mean, thank you, intern Belichick. I don't think that's a terrible decision. I don't think that that's a terrible decision to stick it out with a guy who's going to win nine games per year on average, which is what he's proven to this point. My question about it was, what happens if he doesn't take over the SEC after Nick Saban retires? You just forked out all that money. Yeah. Are you okay with being an 8.5-9 win team per year?
Especially with Auburn going to the playoff every single year from here on out. Like, how could you?
Now, granted, I'll say this. There's, you know, he could follow up last season with another successful year. He could do what everybody's projecting him to do and finish second in the SEC West. And as long as he stays right there like Georgia has, kind of just a step back maybe from Alabama, not able to quite get over the hump, but they're right there. As long as he continues to produce like that, I don't think A&M fans can be unhappy because this will be the most successful run of A&M football in the SEC, and Jimbo Fisher will have elevated them to that point. But just an interesting time for a contract extension to come out a couple of days before the start of the regular season against Kent State. And in my opinion, a potential down year for Texas A&M.
Yeah, and I don't want to derail this too much, but I briefly just want to kind of hit on it. After Nick Saban is gone, who are some of the teams that you think take over in the conference, essentially, if Alabama doesn't continue?
See, Alabama may not go anywhere. Right. Don't just say that Alabama's going to go there because, like, you and I are younger in this sphere, right? But, there are people that are 20, 30 years older than us that experienced Alabama for, you know, the inevitable nature of what it was, that they were going to be good every year. They were good in the 70s. They were good in the 80s. They were good in the 90s. And then, okay, tail end of the 90s, early 2000s, Shula takes over and whatnot, and you got a reprieve for Auburn winning, you know, six seasons in a row over Alabama. Like, you got that reprieve. But, like, I kept hearing from people all the time around that time, oh, they'll be back one day. Like it's going to happen again. And then it happened. And now they're back. You know, it's like there's no telling. Alabama may very well not go away just because Nick Saban leaves. They could go and pick up Dabo Swinney for all they want. They could go and find the next Dabo Swinney. They could go and find somebody else that keeps this ship rolling.
Yeah, and I don't want to live in a world where that happens, but it's a very real possibility because obviously after Saban leaves, they're going to try and find the best guy out there, and they're going to have the money to give him. So it's just an interesting thing. I honestly believe that if Harsin is still here when Saban retires, then Auburn's going to have a very successful stretch for many years to come after.
I think Harsin will be successful. I think Jimbo Fisher has room to be successful going on also with what you're asking, who could take over. What does LSU look like a couple years from now? Is Ed Orgeron still there? Is the program still churning? All of these are questions to ask. I want to get into another variation of start bench cut. We really only have time for one of these trios at this point, but we'll come back to it before the end of the show. Another edition of start bench cut We are switching it around now to win-win loser, a different version of the game that we play so fun. I will provide you a trio of teams. Week one games here. That's what we're looking at. Week one games, all right? Two teams to win, one team to lose. I tried to make it as difficult as possible. Which teams do you think is most likely to lose out of the trio? We will start with LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame. LSU against UCLA, Clemson against Georgia, and Notre Dame against Florida State.
All right, I know how this is going to go. I already know how. I know what you're going to pick. I know what I'm going to pick. Let's go ahead and get it out of the way. I'm going to say LSU and Clemson are the winners, and then Notre Dame is the loser, because obviously I've talked about before, I think Notre Dame is going to lose against Florida State on next Sunday. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting game with UCLA and LSU. I think that's going to be a really fun matchup, a lot of offense. It's going to be a fun game to watch in the Rose Bowl, even though there may not be a ton of fans there other than maybe some purple and gold. But, yeah, it's going to be an exciting matchup. Clemson, Georgia, I think that game is going to be incredibly fun. But at the end of the day, I have so many concerns on the offensive side of the ball for Georgia that I don't know if I can take them to win that game. I think it's going to be close. And then Notre Dame, again, like I said, I've got them losing in an upset loss to Florida State on Sunday.
What would you take out of this group of three teams? Number to call, 334-321-1390, and text line at 334-564-1840. Which of these three teams do you think is the most likely to lose this weekend? LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame. I said the team most likely to lose this weekend is LSU. Now, the line is certainly the closest in the LSU-Notre Dame game out of all three of these teams. I go with LSU here because I was so impressed with how I saw UCLA run the football. And I'm really curious to see how much of a significant step forward LSU's defense really took this offseason all the way to game one for them. UCLA's already got a run in them. They've already gotten to play a game. They've already gotten to have an opportunity to work out some kinks. And they looked really good. Even if LSU's defense has taken a step forward, I still think UCLA could expose some potential weaknesses there. I think all three of these teams win this weekend. I do. I think Notre Dame, I think LSU, I think Clemson all win this – or not Clemson. I think Georgia wins this weekend, but – I don't know. See, even when I say that, it's so difficult. I think it could be more likely for Clemson to win with all these injuries that I've seen with Georgia this recently. I might be changing my tune there as well. We've got time to make picks there, too. Later in the week, we'll take a look at Saturday. But I think it may be more likely that LSU loses this weekend than maybe even Clemson. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Talking Ball with Buster Daniel. We'll also break away from that, look at some of the other high school games happening around this upcoming Friday night.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. Find us on Twitter, at Point Gardner, at Dahl Pound. Also, find our station Twitter accounts at ESPN 106.7, at Fox Sports 983. I want to go back to our previous segment, win-win-loser. And I was talking about the LSU-Clemson-Notre Dame game, or all three of those teams playing this upcoming weekend. And win-win-loser, an addition of start-bench-cut, a variation of that. You have to choose the team that is most likely to lose out of this trio. And I chose all teams today that were favored. I think I'm going to switch my answer from LSU. I'm going to flip it over. I'm going to say Clemson. I've been picking Clemson to lose this entire offseason, even though that Georgia's dealing with some injuries on the offensive side of the ball. Some guys may not suit up for them this upcoming weekend. Darnell Washington, a potential guy that's out for them. I'm still going to stick with my guns on that one. It said that Georgia's a better team at this point than Clemson is. I just have so many concerns about that offensive side of the ball for Clemson. But after that, then I would probably go LSU. I feel probably the most comfortable that Notre Dame, although it's going to be close, I probably feel the most comfortable that Notre Dame is going to beat Florida State this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, again, you look at these three matchups, they're really, really tough. And the other two win-win-losers that we're going to do are also pretty tough as well.
Looking at some of these other groups, let's go to Ohio State, Alabama, and North Carolina, all three teams favored.
I'm going to say, man, this is tough. I'm going to say that Ohio State and Alabama win and North Carolina loses. If there was a team to get upset, I think it would be North Carolina in Blacksburg. I Just the reason being is, like, I'm not necessarily high or low on North Carolina. It's just that or Virginia Tech. It's just that I really think Alabama and Ohio State are going to take care of business in those two games.
I think both Ohio State and Alabama cover. North Carolina very well may not cover. Now, North Carolina, I think the line is set at 5.5. So I'm with you. I feel like I'm least confident in North Carolina on the road at Virginia Tech. But I do like this North Carolina team a lot. I do think they win that game. But it's not necessarily a foregone conclusion that they will cover in Blacksburg, Virginia against the Virginia Tech Hokies. I'm not totally certain there, because I think that crowd's going to be electric in that ball game.
It's going to be hype. Yeah, and then Justin Fuente, the head coach at Virginia Tech, needs to get the ball rolling this season. He needs to get a signature win. He's been looking for it. Virginia Tech fans need something to kind of hold on to. A Friday night win over a top 10 team would certainly be good for the program.
Our last trio of win-win-loser, our weekly Wednesday edition of Start Bench Cut, switched it around here to win-win-loser on the Wednesday edition of the show. UCF, Iowa, Wisconsin, Big Ten flavor here.
Yeah, so UCF playing Boise State, Iowa playing Indiana, I believe, and then Wisconsin playing Penn State. That's the Fox, I believe it's the Big Noon kickoff
game. It is.
It's going to be really exciting. That's a game that a lot of Auburn fans are going to be tuning into. I'm going to say that UCF is going to beat Boise State, and then the Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin, Penn State matchups, I mean, they are just so tough. Like, it's so tough. I'm going to say that UCF actually and Iowa are the two teams that win, and Wisconsin is the one that loses. I'm going to say that because I don't feel very confident in that matchup. It's one of those where it's like, I want Penn State to win so bad or to lose so badly that it's going to be a game where they go and they show up at 11 a.m. Like, that's just my gut feeling.
I wrote whiskey first on this list.
So it's not matchups. It's gut feeling. It's just gut feeling that Penn State's going to go and they're just going to show up, and it's going to shock people.
Is it going to rain this afternoon, Lance?
It might.
Do you feel it in your knees? Do your joints ache?
My left kneecap right now is actually just kind of got a little bit of an ache going on, so that may be what's going on.
I felt most comfortable with Wisconsin and UCF. I think Iowa loses. What is there to like about, and this is generally, like, I really am asking this question. This is not me downing Iowa here. I'm curious, what do you like about this Iowa football team other than they're the epitome of 8-4 every year in Big Ten football?
Hard-nosed and consistent. Yeah. I mean, if top to bottom, in terms of, like, the way that they built their program, I think they're a better program than Indiana. And when you look at Indiana, obviously they've got a lot of production coming back. I'm very high. I don't think that any of these teams here are going to be bad by no means. It's just I look at Iowa and I look at the consistency of that program, and then I look at a team like Indiana, and obviously they had a lot of things go their way in the Big Ten last season, but you question whether or not they're going to be able to be consistent and be a team like Iowa for years to come. So I don't know. It's just a gut feeling. It's not matchups. It's not whether or not, like, looking at lines or anything like that. It's not anything to do with statistics. This is just simply a gut feeling that Penn State's going to show up.
What's funny about this is that for someone that has said often throughout the offseason, Lance, mm-hmm. that you think Indiana could win the Big Ten, mm-hmm. that they could have a shocking year, in our couple of times that we've done Start, Bench, Cut, whether it was whether it was in on the fence or out or now win-win loser, you have backed off of Indiana.
Yeah, it's as we approach the season, it's a gut feeling that I'm going with
that they're going to regress.
That they're going to lose to Iowa.
That's kind of like my worry with the Cleveland Browns this year. I love my Browns.
It's like,
I think they're super talented, but I'm afraid.
Yeah,
it's, I want to go back.
I go into every single season, right, and you look at, like, statistics and trends and things like that, and you just kind of get in your mind how you expect things to go down. But there's always that one team or that one matchup in a weekend where you just kind of expect things to go normally, even though there's an opportunity on the other side of the coin for that team to go out there and win. You look at that Penn State-Wisconsin matchup. I mean, recruiting-wise, I believe they're number one in the country right now, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite. Like, they recruit well. They're talented. James Franklin is a really talented head coach. I don't know, man. It's just a random gut feeling that I've been thinking about throughout the week, and I'm going to say it on air. I think that Penn State beats Wisconsin, and I'm not happy about it.
I felt most comfortable with Wisconsin and UCF. I give the loss to Iowa there out of that group. I think Indiana does beat Iowa this upcoming weekend. I like Indiana in this game a lot. I like this Indiana football team. I think they're a complete football team. And then they've got the offensive line. They've got the quarterback play. They've got the skill position players. They've got the defense. You talk about Tom Allen and what he's built. He's built a strong football team that has been a tough out for the last couple of seasons. Last year may have been the breakout year, but 2019, they were no joke either. They still went to a bowl game in 2019 and were 8-5. Granted, they did lose to Tennessee in that bowl game, and they did lose to Ole Miss last year in the Gator Bowl. They may have lost to two SEC schools in back-to-back years, but they have still been a bowl team. Like, this is a team that's been around now for a couple of seasons, and they were getting better, and you could see signs of them getting better all the way back to 2016 when they went to their first bowl game in a while. 16, they went to a bowl game. 15, they went to a bowl game. 17 and 18, they were 5-7. This is a team that's been around a little bit in terms of their emergence, kind of Kentucky-esque in that trajectory. And now I think they're here to stay. I think Tom Allen probably has gotten to that point where Kentucky is now where they're going to go to a bowl game. Are they going to be one of the best teams in the Big Ten? Maybe not. But I think they can be an 8 or 9 win team consistently in the Big Ten, just like I think Kentucky can kind of look at that too, which is what you and I are expecting Kentucky to do this upcoming year, 8-4, 9-3. And so I'm going to value that. I think Indiana, I think they're more talented than Iowa this upcoming year, especially at quarterback.
And see, I'm not mad at that. And when you look at their matchups and stuff like that, you would say that, and you would say it with confidence. It's just a gut feeling that this is one that I was initially high on that I would be wrong on at the end of the day.
Just like we previewed coming into this segment, we have Talking Ball with Buster Daniel, pre-recorded an interview with him earlier today. Let's take a listen to that before we get out of here for our last break of the show. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lee Scott football head coach Buster Daniel with us on the show today for our weekly segment, Talking Ball with Buster Daniel. Coach, how you doing today?
Man, I am wonderful. I'm glad to see the sunshine finally out.
Hey, Coach, yeah, you're going through a hurricane. On top of that, you're having to prepare for a rival in Glenwood, and one of the better teams in this state. It's Glenwood week. What does this week of practice look like for you guys as they prepare for the annual rivalry game?
Well, we've had a lot of just mental reps, you know, with the hurricane coming through and, you know, just torrential rains. We've had to adjust our schedule somewhat for practice. And, you know, we've done that. We came in on Sunday and we were expecting to get outside, and we weren't able to get outside then. So we're going to the gym and having a good practice and get the week kicked off. And, you know, we were able to go out on Monday and then, of course, Tuesday again, get some rain. So we watched a lot of film. A lot of mental stuff and talking about what they do in certain sets and, you know, how they play and what they, you know, what they're able to do in different formations. So it's been a lot of mental reps. It's not the kind of practice we've hoped for, but, you know, we're in good position right now. Everybody's, you know, healthy and ready to go. And it's been a good week so far, just mental preparation.
It probably really helps to have had that bye week last week where you guys could get into your pads and hit each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we went out last Monday, Tuesday, and even Wednesday, and, you know, it just banged on each other a little bit and went back to learn how to tackle and how to be in the right place and, you know, just teach a little bit of toughness. And the kids responded well. You know, we had a film session on that Monday, and, you know, it got a little heated in there between coaches and players. You know, we got on a little bit and kind of checked their manhood a little bit, you know, and just kind of tested them. And they responded extremely well on Monday. They went out and got better and did the things we wanted them to do. But, yeah, we went out last week and got a little more physical and, you know, just had a great week of practice.
Of course, every game and every year are different, but what are some of the things that the players that are coming back from last year's team, what are some things that they have learned from last season's game going into this year's game about these high-octane matchups against rivals like Glenwood and Pike?
Well, you know, you always talk about getting better from one first week to second week and all that, and all that's good, well and good. But you know, you want to improve on what you didn't do well the week before. And like I said, we had a week off to prepare for Glenwood, but you know, we gotta take care of Lee Scott. We can't make bad mistakes, have bad penalties before the ball snap and that kind of thing. And we've got to improve on that. So that's what the kids have understood, and the coaches have done a good job. Making them understand that's how you win football games. You can't really beat yourself. And that's things we worked on, you know, last week and this week.
on the offensive side of the ball, senior Tate McKelvey taking most of the snaps at quarterback. How have you seen him grow as a leader at the position and in running this offense?
Well, you know, Tate was a leader last year as far as just how he played the game. He's transferred into a leader with his mouth, his actions, and just the whole 9 yards now as a senior. So he's doing a great job there, and you know, as well with some other kids. But, you know, he's filling that role extremely well for us right now.
Alongside him in the backfield, you've got a stable of running backs that can do some physical damage to opposing defenses. They're looking for contact, J.J. Myers, Landry Cochran, just to name a few. What are you seeing from these younger guys out of the backfield?
He named a couple of them, but we got about four guys that's going to touch the ball in the backfield. And, you know, J.J.'s been banged up a little bit with ankles. And so Andrew Hahn and even Landry Cochran and Patrick Fudge have all filled in nicely since he's been down a little bit. But they're all going to touch the ball Friday night and keep fresh legs back there. And that's the biggest thing we got to do is keep those guys fresh.
Going back to the first game of the season against Chambers Academy a couple of weeks ago, obviously not the way you guys wanted it to go, but what did those guys take away? You know, as soon as they step off the field, you guys are getting in the huddle talking about the game. What is something that those guys took away from that Chambers game that can help them get ready for Glenwood?
Well, the biggest thing is they got to understand, and I think they do now, that you can't make mistakes against good football teams. You know, you got to be in position. You got to make tackles. You got to catch passes when they're thrown to you. You got to make blocks. You got to tackle. I mean, you got to play football. And we didn't do that against Chambers. You know, we had a lot of mistakes, a lot of big plays. If Chambers would have drove down the field and, you know, in 10, 12, 15 play drives and scored, hey, we can live with that. That just means they're better than us. But we gave them too many big plays and too many easy opportunities. So that's what they came out understanding, that they can't do that against good football teams.
It's the beginning of a three-game home stretch before you guys will go on a three-game road stretch against some teams like Bessemer Academy and whatnot. It's a tough home schedule, of course, still with Glenwood, Pike, and Macon East coming up. But what does progression look like for this team before they have to get on a bus and travel to state? Where do you want your guys to be at by the time you hit late September?
Well, just get better every week. And if they do that and they improve on things we may, weren't good at the game before, if we improve on that, you know, end of the season, mid-season, we should be where we want to be and play in the rest of our schedule. But, you know, like I said, it's a tough schedule, first three games, or really four games with Macon East coming in. But we got to improve each week and doing things the better than we did the week before, and that's where we want to be.
Taking a look at the opponent this week and preparing for Glenwood, what have you seen on film from the Gators after a surprising 1-1 start?
Well, they're very talented now. They got athletes all over the field. They played a team last week in Escambia that was is one of the best teams in the state, 2A, 1A, 3A. It doesn't matter. They are loaded. And Glenwood hung with them for the most part. They got a lot of explosive guys on special teams. If you kick it to them, they're going to beat you. They're great in open space, but that's what athletes are good. But they're very, very talented team. I think we can, as far as the discipline part, I think we can have an edge on that part if we'll do things that we're supposed to be doing.
What are the keys to the game on Friday in order for you guys to win?
Control the ball and make tackles in open field and don't make silly mistakes. That's the three things we've got to do better.
Coach, I appreciate you spending some time with us today to talk to us about the ball game and give us a preview for this upcoming Friday. Hope you have a good day of class and a good rest of your week with practice.
I appreciate it, man, and go Warriors.
That was Lee Scott football head coach Buster Daniel joining us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line to preview his team's upcoming game against the Glenwood Gators this Friday at Judd Scott Field at 7 p.m. Some really good AISA action coming up this Friday. We'll be back with more of On the Line in just a moment. Wrapping up the Wednesday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. Just wrapped up our segment of Talkin' Ball with Buster Daniel. Going to be speaking with Auburn High School play-by-play announcer Scott Bagwell later on this week to give you an update on the Auburn High School Tigers as they go on the road to open up their region schedule against Prattville this upcoming Friday. That's going to be a high-octane defensive matchup on the road at the Prattville Lions. Before we get out of here for the Wednesday edition of the show, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. The results of the first semifinals in America's Got Talent is on NBC at 7. Wednesday game show lineup on ABC with Press Your Luck at 7 and the $100,000 Pyramid at 8. A new episode of Guy's Grocery Games is on Food Network at 8 as well. Some movie selections for tonight. Castaway is on AMC at 7. Superhero movie with X-Men, Dark Phoenix, on FX at 6:30. A pair of excellent sports films are on FS1 starting at 6 with The Natural. Following it at 8:30, The Ultimate Underdog Story, Rudy, will be on. Live sports, midweek college football is back. That's right. UAB takes on Jacksonville State at the Crampton Bowl in Montgomery at 6:30 on ESPN. U.S. Open tennis is on ESPN2 from 6 to 10 with second round matches in the Grand Slam event. Paralympics 2020 in Tokyo is on NBC Sports from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. with track and field, road cycling, wheelchair tennis, and table tennis. And that is what's on TV tonight. 3 minutes left until we get out of here, and the Drive with Bill Cameron will run from 4 to 6 p.m. here as they do every weekday on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Lance, before we get out of here, my man, let's take a look again at tonight's official beginning of week one in college football, UAB, Jacksonville State. All three of us picking here in the room today, intern Sting, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner. We're all taking UAB, and we're all taking UAB to cover, but this is particularly an interesting game due to these two teams' close proximity to one another and their recruiting footprint in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at UAB, obviously, offensively, they're going to control the ground game, I think. They're going to have a lot of issues. At least, Tyler Johnston, you talked about their entire season weighing on his arm. He's not got a very strong arm. He's not the greatest decision maker in the world. They're going to try and control the ground game tonight. They're going to try and establish that against a pretty good Jacksonville State team. You look at UAB's defense, they're also really stout, both in the rushing and passing game. In terms of you look at the total yards that they allow, I mean, they're just exceptional. Jacksonville State, on the other hand, Zarek Cooper, former Clemson backup, still leading the charge for them, was injured halfway through last season. They've got two good quarterbacks, Jacksonville State does, that they could go with if they want to. This offense, though, when you look at what it likes to do, like you mentioned earlier, 66% of the time Jacksonville State runs the football. UAB pretty darn good at stopping the run. It's not a good matchup for Jacksonville State. Even though the Gamecocks are still a really talented team, we talked about it earlier, they took Florida State down to the wire last year. I just don't see UAB struggling because, again, the matchups, it just seems like it goes in UAB's favor. And I'm going to take them to cover, but I think it'll be close. Like I mentioned earlier, a 35-17 type of game seems fair.
UAB being a contender to go back-to-back, like that's a foregone conclusion in the Conference USA, but how legitimate they actually end up being this season, I think Tyler Johnston III has a good arm. It's the decision-making that's been an issue. I think he can push the ball downfield. PFF labeled him as College Jameis. That was the nickname that they gave him, and I think that's pretty accurate. You talk about how many touchdowns he had, but also that is compared to interceptions, and it's almost like a 1-to-1 touchdown-interception ratio through his first two or three seasons at UAB. Last year, though, did very well at protecting the football. Was much better than Bryson Lucero, who had a nice chunk of touchdowns, and I believe had a negative touchdown-interception ratio. He steps in, 7 TDs, 1 pick last year for Tyler Johnston, and was the main cog as to why UAB was able to win the Conference USA last year. I'll be paying attention to that quarterback play at UAB because I think Johnston does have the potential to be very good in the Conference USA, if not the best quarterback in the Conference USA this upcoming year. That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.